Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Chris Lowe is scheduled to join us here in just a couple of minutes. But Joe, we were having an interesting discussion with Munson earlier in the show about Nick Saban and Bear Bryant. I think when it comes to like all-time coaches, I am giving the edge to Nick Saban just because of the era of college football that we're in, and that's no disrespect to Bear Bryant and what he was able to accomplish, but I just considered from a pure coaching standpoint and everything you have to deal with today in the modern game of college football, I think Nick Saban is the greatest college football coach of all time.
Well, I do too, and part of that is scholarship limits. You know, yeah. I mean, that's something that certainly – Bear Bryant did not have the 85 limit at any point in his career. So there were limits. I think limits came into play later in his career, but he did not have the 85 limit. He did not have nearly this many rival programs, or not just even rival, just programs around the country that invested this much in winning. And he didn't have to deal with, I think, a lot of the outside distraction stuff that today's coaches have to deal with too. Didn't get paid as much, but that's not what we're talking about. You know, the coaches of today, I mean, the salaries have skyrocketed, and, you know, you can argue whether you think that should be the case or not, but the job is definitely harder. I don't see how anybody could argue that. And when you look at what Nick Saban has sustained, through all that, not to mention that he won a championship at LSU previously, I think it's a clear choice, Nick Saban for number one.
We have Chris Lowe on the line with us now from ESPN. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to join us this morning. We appreciate it. Hope you and the family are doing well during this crazy time in our world.
Yes, we are. I appreciate you asking. I know you guys are really having to tap into your creativity, as we all are, to generate things to talk about, and it's with no games, no live sports. It's, you know, I'm 54, and you know, it's a reminder of those of us, certainly those of us who make a living in sports, just of how ingrained they are in our lives. You know, and that to be in a period now where there are no live sport events at all in any sport to talk about is almost surreal, really.
It really is, and it's been going on for a couple weeks now, Chris, and you know, it's still, I think, jarring for all of us to kind of be in this situation, not only from a sports perspective, but just from a society as a whole. And nobody really wants to think about, you know, how long this could go, but certainly I don't think it's out of the question that college football, the season itself, could be impacted by this somewhere down the line.
Yeah, well, I mean, sports heal, man. They unite, and you know, maybe some people in the SEC might not agree with that. Football, the realm of SEC football, that they unite, but they really do. You know, when you think back to all the good that come out of sports and the life lessons that we all learn, whether we ever play past Gray Y or high school or play professionally. But I don't know where, I don't know what the end game is with college football and, you know, when we reconvene. I know this about the sport of football. I've talked to a ton of coaches over the last week and a half, all over the country. Football is not a sport that was designed to be away from it for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 months, and then bam, you just drop a bunch of kids back in July or whenever, or August, and then you start playing. Really, no sport's designed to do that, but certainly not football. When you start talking about contact and being in football shape and the blocking, tackling aspect of it, so if we're sitting here, you know, the end of June, and nobody's back on campus, there've been no meetings, no practices, no workouts, no organized workouts, and you, again, you're talking about, so some of these kids haven't played, you know, the team. Think about the teams that didn't go to a bowl game, all right? They haven't had any contact, would not have had any contact since, what, late November?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you drop back in practice on July, August. That's a long time to go without having any physical contact and expect to play a game in a month. So And I know I'm painting, I'm not trying to paint a worst case, but no, you're right. I don't think any of us know where we're going to be in a month or 2 months. And this is what I hope. I hope that whatever decision's made, and I think this will be the case, that the well-being of the kids, the student athletes, and nothing is rushed back just for the sake of having games again.
What do you think, Chris, about, you know well, the financial impact of home games for all these athletic departments, of course. I mean, it's still, you know, and especially when you talk about a place like Tennessee, Ohio State, Michigan, these huge stadiums, it's even more revenue, obviously, for programs like that. But what do you think about the prospect of games in empty stadiums, you know, with players and officials and coaches tested and still having – you know, the television revenue, which is, of course, a huge part of this as well, but then obviously sacrificing a chunk of the of what it is and what the pageantry of the game is as well.
Yeah, I hope we don't get to that point. Boy, I really do. And at what if we did go down that road, why are we doing it? Are you doing it just so the players can have a chance to play? And maybe people get to see the games on TV, but you know it's the pageantry, it's the fabric of college football are the fans. And Alabama playing at Penn State, you know, or Georgia playing at, you know, Florida and Jacksonville. I mean, that's – and the fans coming together. You know, it's generations of families going. And think about the communities. Think about Knoxville, Tennessee, you know, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Columbus, Ohio. You know, if there are no fans coming, the hotels and the restaurant industry, and you know, where will we be? Will we be back to a point where people are allowed to go to restaurants? I mean, none of us know that. But I know this about college football. College football is the engine that drives the train at just about all universities, certainly athletically. You know, if there's no football and you're not generating revenue from football, then what's that say about your baseball program or your women's tennis program or your track program or your rowing program? I mean, they can't exist. I know it's a question we all have. I've talked to ADs as well. You know, nobody knows. If this thing starts to dissipate and flush out, I know I talked to Nick Saban the other day. What he would propose is bringing the players back, say, in June. Mid-June, if we're at that point, the medical people say it's okay. And then this is going back to his NFL background, having 12 or 14 days of OTAs like they do in the pros, where you bring kids back and you have, you know, so many days with just helmets, shorts, and shoulder pads, just to get them reacclimated to football and get them back together. That would be a starting point. We'll see, you know, come June if that's possible.
Chris Lowe from ESPN on the line with us. And, Chris, we were having a discussion earlier in the show about something pro football focused throughout there yesterday, and that is the top five quarterbacks you've ever seen in college football. I'm not going to ask you to list top five off the top of your head, but if I were to ask you who is the best college football quarterback you've ever seen play, what would your answer be and why?
Oh, man, that's a hard one. Because I'm old, so I've seen a lot of them. And I'm not a cop-out kind of guy. The best player, I didn't see Barry Sanders, because he's a running back. I didn't see Barry Sanders play live that year in 1988, okay? But the best quarterback I ever saw play live for a season was Cam Newton in 2010 at Auburn.
Yeah.
He was totally unstoppable. I mean, if it was third and three, third and four, fourth and two, he was going to get the first down every single time. Nobody had any answers for him. He was the best. I still think he's the best player for one season, the most dominant player, certainly at that position that I've ever seen. So I'll cop out and say for one season it was him. You know, over the course of career, you know, it's hard to beat what Peyton Manning did at Tennessee. You know, what he meant to the university, really. I know that transcends just football. But Tommy Frazier at Nebraska. Now, those were great Nebraska teams. But he really, you know, was a guy that in what they did and what they asked him to do was just unbelievable. I just watched the other night for the first time the Michael Vick documentary. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see it, the 30 for 30.
Oh, yeah.
And he really reveled for college football players and really for all quarterbacks. You know, certainly the black quarterback and in the way, you know, that they are viewed in at the NFL level, he revolutionized that position. I mean, he set the table, and I think they said that in the documentary. And Shane Beamer is a very good friend of mine. I've known Frank Beamer for a long time. And they got to see him every day, every single day. And they said what he did on the practice field was, you know, I guess when they got to the games, they were almost – took it for granted because, you know, when you're up close and you see something every day, you know, your jaw doesn't drop. But his ability to throw the football, his ability to escape, his ability to make plays that nobody else on the planet could make. I mean, he right there, too, will read right there at the top to be Michael Vick.
Yeah, unbelievable talent. Well, I've got another best ever question for you, Chris. We've been debating a little bit today. The Bear Bryant, Nick Saban debate, very very different eras, but if you had to rank one of them one over the other one, which way would you go?
Yeah, and I know that's one that is if you want to start the debate in Alabama, that's one you throw out there. I mean, I've always been hesitant to compare eras, period. You know, I mean, it's just hard to do that because you're talking about different. You know, you're not comparing apples to apples, oranges to oranges. Okay. I heard a little bit as you guys brought me in. I think you guys were discussing that a little bit. Whoever said this is absolutely right. What you have to deal with now as a head coach and all the different balls you have to juggle in the air, the different hats you have to wear are far different than anything that they had, the head coaches had to when Barry was coaching. You know, I'll say this, and again, I know it's a long-winded way of answering your question. Bear was such an icon and was so much bigger than just football. I mean, he was. He was at a time, at a very turbulent time in this country's history, certainly in the South. He was somebody that instilled pride in everybody. And I think the way – and I've talked to Sylvester Croom a lot about this, about Bear Bryant. You know, Sylvester played for Bear and was one of Bear's favorite players ever when he was at Alabama. And just the way that Bear could mold men and develop men. I mean, again, it was a different time. The way he coached, think about the whole Junction Boys. Could you imagine even thinking about coaching that like that now? And right. Bear said himself, it's a miracle that more kids didn't die, you know, during that whole deal. You can't and shouldn't be able to coach like that now. But, I don't know. Nick has done, you know, when you look at the championships, he's won titles at two different schools. He's been unbelievably consistent. I still think, and I tend to look at things more than just the football field part of it. I would say this, that Bear Bryant right now remains more iconic and more woven, more deeply woven into the fabric of the sport. Forever and forever will the Nick Saban. Now, you asked me 10 years from now, maybe that changes.
Chris Lowe from ESPN has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to join us this morning and continued wellness to you and your family as we move forward here.
Same to you guys. Great to catch up.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Appreciate you. Joe, when we come back, I want to get into the discussion of college football playing games without fans. What do we make of that possibility, and should that be on the table in terms of a consideration for college football? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through another beautiful day here in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, I was just so happy yesterday. It was warm. The sun was out. I spent outside, like hours outside, just wandering aimlessly in my yard, not really accomplishing anything, but just being outside. It was wonderful.
Yes, it was. We need more of that. I think we got a decent weekend ahead, right?
I think so, too.
A chance to do a little yard work. We got some I shouldn't say we. My family got some yard work done yesterday. Yeah, I mean, we're talking, it doesn't look like we're going to have to deal with rain again until Tuesday. And the highs today and tomorrow are great. A little bit cooler after that, but this is your weather report. It looks all right until Tuesday, so let's take advantage. At least go take a walk, take a run, get out a little bit.
Who knew Joe Rexrode was like a meteorologist? That's just awesome.
Very
versatile.
Skills
continue to evolve right before our very eyes.
That's right.
It's impressive.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yes. Well, you know, I will say that as I'm on Twitter, you know, of all the accounts I follow probably more than 1,000 people, but Nash Severe WX remains.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, they are amazing, so that's the standard.
No question about it. Those guys and girls that do work over there, really, really good stuff. Joe, we were talking to Chris Lowe in the last segment and kind of dissecting the possibility of college football games resuming action this fall with no fans in the stands. And Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby had some similar comments about that yesterday during a teleconference, just talking about the possibility of returning to action and playing in front of no fans. He said, you know, that's a possibility that we're considering right now, but it's hard to forecast those things. I just, you know, it's one of those things where if you're the NFL or the NHL, the NBA, I think we've had discussion about playing games without fans in the building. To me, I would still do it. I would still love to watch college football on TV, even if that meant that no fans were in the building. But there is something different, I think, about the fans and the environment at a college football game than really any other sport that I could think of.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, like, Chris Lowe is absolutely right. First of all, you think about, I mean, look, the economy, the annual economy of a town like Knoxville, a town like Tuscaloosa in particular, these college towns that are built around, you know, a big university and a big college football program, if you and again, you can just do the numbers, you know, add up X number of seats and, you know, get an average price on tickets, and you will come up with a lot of revenue just in attendance still for these college football programs that have, especially the huge stadiums like Neyland Stadium and like the Horseshoe, and, you know, but any Power Five, you know, college football program with a big stadium that is a big part of everything. It's the entire operation is built around that. So if you took away, you know, fans and the cheerleaders and the bands, I mean, all that goes around it, I think that stuff is around college football. The things that are around college football are more, I think, cherished than anything else in this country. I'm not saying it's the most popular sport with everyone, but the fan experience and everything around a game, I don't think there's anything that compares to it. And so if you took that out, it would be terrible and it would not be the same. But I do agree that you still do it if you can do it. I'm sorry, but I mean, the NCAA Board of Governors just voted to distribute $225 million to D1 schools in June, okay? Yeah. That's a $375 million cut from the plan. It was going to be about $600 million. So, I mean, that just shows you right there, already it is a massive hit. Now, in the spring, you know, a lot of these sports that don't make money, that travel, in the very short term, you actually, you know, a lot of these athletic departments are saving some money on that, but you get to a point with football being disrupted at all, it's going to hurt. If you don't at least have the television revenue, it's a much bigger hurt. And as we've talked about, as much as we would hate the idea of these fanless games and it would be so weird and unsettling and not great, I'm still watching football if I can.
Yeah.
If there's football in this country to be played, if it can be worked out, and you're talking the logistics of testing everyone and, you know, all that stuff that goes with it, if it can happen, I can't imagine too many people who would not at least want that over nothing.
Oh, I agree 100%, and I would put myself in that category as well. And, you know, getting back to Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, I mean, we're talking about the cancellation of some spring events that have already happened. it's not going to look normal. I mean, I think we all kind of realize that at this point in terms of the preparation heading into this season. And here's what Bowlesby had to say about it. He said, quote, "I think it's very unlikely that we're going to have any spring games. We're looking at a window for a return to activity that's 6 or 8 weeks. The month of May typically is heavy lifting and training month. Then the athletes get some time off and coaches have camps and clinics. It may be that we can't do any of that this year. So what do you do to get ready?" I think that's part of what they're thinking about and what the transition, what does that transition look like? Again, that's Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby talking about just the uncertainty as we move forward here in the last segment. I mean, you've got some teams that haven't played games since November, and you've gone through a spring practice season now that's been incredibly disrupted. Probably not going to happen at all for any team until at least maybe June, which is an idea that Chris Lowe said that Nick Saban has tossed out there. That's a long time in the world of football to go without practicing in full contact and then expect, like, let's say you can't return until like July. You're getting ready real quickly at the end of August, early part of September to start playing games. I mean, that's a very quick turnaround and not a whole lot of time for a college football season that already doesn't have a preseason to get ready. I mean, there's just a lot out there that you have to figure out.
Yeah, and I mean, look, if it's Nick Saban, as Chris Lowe told us in the last segment, Nick Saban loves the idea of, you know, some kind of a June thing. I've heard that, almost like, you know, mini camp. I mean, it would basically be like trying to make up for the spring practices that basically didn't, for some, didn't happen at all, and for a lot, barely happened. But let's say, you know, it's mid-July. I mean, to me, why not just have a much longer training camp? And you can can space things out. You can, you know, do it however you want to make it so that it's not too grueling or too overwhelming. But then that would sort of be like smashing spring ball and preseason camp together. I mean, there's just so many different ways it could go right now, you know. But you have to be ready for those things. And actually, the camp thing is a good point. I mean, that's actually a big moneymaker for a lot of these athletic departments, like coaches as well. You know, these summer camps, basketball and football and other sports. You know, what if all that's wiped out? I mean, there's just so much right now on the table that doesn't sound very good to anyone in college athletics.
It sure doesn't. And look, I'm hopeful that we all have this thing figured out and are in a better situation by that point. But to your point, Joe, if it comes down to it and you're not playing games in front of fans at college football season, at least to start with, I'm going to watch. I think everybody is going to watch at that point, just because college football, if we're still in a similar situation in our nation at that point, it's going to be a godsend to have college football back on the TV by then.
Yeah, I don't know. I know most people couldn't care less about this, but I'd be really interested to see if it got to that. Will we be in the press box? You know, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about close quarters in there, and then to me, you'd have to be talking about testing for anybody who would be in there, or is it just, you know, you play the games? And maybe there's a sideline reporter and you got like a televised press conference and people talk and that's how the information gets. I don't know. That's another aspect of it, which, again, it's just a small part of it. But obviously for us, it'd be really interesting to see how they would think about that and whether we'd be let in or not.
When we come back, Major League Baseball and the Players Association have agreed on a whole variety of things about the shortened season that's going to take place, hopefully, this year in Major League Baseball. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Jeff Passan from ESPN talking about the deal the Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association have come to regarding this year's shortened season when it starts, if it starts at some point, in Major League Baseball. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning. And Joe, some interesting news coming out yesterday from the Major League Baseball and the Players Association, and we'll get to the service time part of it here in a minute, but from a salary perspective, this comes from CBS Sports. Per the reports, the players will collectively get a $170 million advance spread over 2 months, and then their salaries will be prorated for the season, depending on how long it lasts. There's still more things to work out before the season starts, but for now, the two sides are likely in a holding pattern until we get more clarity as to when teams will start reporting back to spring training for what we expect all, what we all expect will be 4 weeks long of spring training before the regular season returns. So some interesting stuff coming out yesterday, Joe, from Major League Baseball. Probably the most interesting part of it is the service time. And this is where Munson, this could, in a worst-case scenario, end up really hurting your Los Angeles Dodgers. Basically, the players are going to get the same service time for 2020 as they had in 2019, which essentially means that players who are set to hit free agency after this season will still do so. So it's conceivable, although we all hope this doesn't happen, that Mookie Betts could have been traded to the Dodgers and will be a free agent after this season without ever having played a single game for them. Mookie, I mean, that's crazy to think about.
Mookie Betts, best Dodger I've never seen, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the Randy Moss of the MLB. I like it. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not worried about that. He'll re-sign. I think he'll re-sign.
I mean, I guess
there's so much talent around that team. Like why would you not re-sign?
If you're going to choose the Dodgers nothing happens, I guess you'd just choose them again. Right?
Yeah, just I'll sign a one-year deal or maybe a two-year deal at this point. I mean, Mookie Betts is still young. You know, so I think that's what will end up happening. So that I'm not too worried about too much, because I even have the same issues with – I mean, the Lakers have the same issues with Anthony Davis. Yeah. Like, they don't know if Anthony Davis is going to re-sign with the Lakers or not, and they traded away Josh Hart, Lonzo Ball, and Brandon Ingram and all their assets, and they may only have Anthony Davis one more year. But you don't really sign guys or trade for guys with that expiring contract if you know for sure, unless you're Kawhi Leonard. You know, unless you're for sure that guy is going to re-sign. So I think he'll re-sign. But it is intriguing because there'll be other teams with other players that not so much. They probably won't.
Yeah.
Especially if you play for the Astros.
Yeah, it'll hurt some teams. I mean, this is obviously on the $170 million, the advance, like you said, Robbie, that's prorated. That also means the union agreed not to sue the league for the full salaries.
Right.
They got, of course, the service time, and they agreed also, you know, to do this jam together season if it happens, because that's not an easy sell for players. But they agreed on the idea of this season that they hope does happen. And again, they may also be talking about no fans if they come back in June. But all the more doubleheaders, the regular season, you know, into October, playoff games in November. Maybe the neutral site playoff games, which I still think is stupid, but I mean, at least the players are on board with this alternative schedule that right now they've sort of devised.
And there may be a thing that comes out of this agreement and this point but it may help college baseball, because also a part of this deal between MLB and the MLBPA, the two sides have agreed that Major League Baseball can shorten the draft all the way down to 5 rounds if they choose to do so. Now, they don't have to do that. They could also increase the total if they want. They've basically given the MLB the freedom to do what they want to with the drafts. That's not going to impact, like, today's baseball players very much. As we know, like, the minor leagues through baseball, like, it's such a journey to get there and to get to Major League Baseball for most guys. But this could end up being, like, if let's say they do shorten the draft all the way down to 5 rounds, you might see a lot of players that, you know, normally would leave and enter the draft after their senior year of high school. Maybe they go and play college baseball. I mean, that certainly could be a possibility that in the long run maybe helps college baseball and the talent pool there in the short term.
Yeah, that could be. It's crazy to think of an MLB draft with 5 rounds, because obviously
rounds.
I mean, there's so many rounds in the Major League Baseball draft. That's just as hard for me to wrap my mind around. Owners have also, you know, talked about reducing minor league affiliates. According to ESPN's story, up to 40 of the 160 affiliates, which is interesting. I mean, a lot of minor league owners, obviously, just like so many people right now, very fearful of what this is doing to them economically. So. That's also something that could be changed. I don't know if that's for the better, but pretty significant change.
And it looks like the draft for Major League Baseball, normally held like right in the middle of the season, will be held no earlier than August, per report. So pushing the draft back as well. It's just interesting to watch how Major League Baseball is having to adapt to this. We still don't know when exactly they'll be back. But I do look at this, Joe, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I'm interested to see when they do come back what a shortened season looks like, because I think there could be, at least from my vantage point and my ability to watch baseball, I think it would help my interest in it just from the shortened aspect of the season.
Yeah. I mean, you think about all the sports stuff right now that is being, you know, the horse races and auto, you know, the Indy 500. I mean, if things, and look, we'll take it if things can get moving and be moving by then, but think of all the things that are going to be around August, September now in the sports world.
I know.
I mean, it's, again, no one's going to complain, but it will also be a lot easier to lose stuff. I still can't totally get the Kentucky Derby picking the first weekend of college football to be run. I mean, the Kentucky Derby is something a lot of people watch. I watch it every year, but some of that is just because it's on a weekend in May when there's a gap there. You know, you've got postseason games with NBA and NHL, but most of those are at night. I mean, that thing at that time of year, I don't really understand that. But so much of sports could be crammed. And then, of course, as we've talked about with hockey, you know, how far could that be pushed? I think, you know, Hal Gill made the point yesterday, I think he'd like to see it end by like July 15th if you could wrap everything up. That doesn't seem realistic to me. It certainly doesn't seem realistic with fans to me. You know,
right.
But I understand what he's saying too, because now, if not, if you're going way past that, how much disruption are you causing for the 2020-21 season?
And also, Radio.com's MLB insider John Heyman is reporting that it's possible Major League Baseball will expand their postseason as well, going from 10 teams to 14 teams in 2020. So that would mean 7 teams from both the American League and the National League. So that's another way. I mean, we talked about, you know, maybe the NHL or the NBA, when they come back, expanding their postseason, more so with the NHL and how tight the races are there for playoff spots. Looks like the MLB giving some consideration when they come back this season, or if they come back this season, to expanding their postseason from 10 teams to 14 teams.
So I'm trying to think, 7 on each side. So how does that look? I mean, that's got to be...
Does one team get a bye?
Just
like,
one? Yeah, I guess you do, one gets a bye, and then you have 3 short series to get that down to a final four, I guess. I guess that's what it would be, right? Probably one team on each side sits out. You got 3 quick series to get it down to 4, and then you go from there. It's fine. I don't know. I mean, I still think that you can get a pretty good idea of who should be there and who shouldn't in 60, 80, 100 games. But I guess it's okay. I mean, everything is so different about this year, obviously, that I understand the idea behind expanding it.
And I'll be interested to see, like, if they do, like, do they add just, like, more of those one-game, like, playoff situations, play-in games? A lot of people, like, really don't like those. I don't have much of a problem with it. Like, I think, you know, if you want to put yourself in a better position to not have to play in a play-in game, play better in the regular season. I mean, that's what it boils down to me. So I wouldn't be opposed if there's more of that. And I don't know if the MLB is talking about expanding to where there's actual series taking place with more teams, or if there's more of these one-game playoffs to kind of set the playoff field from there.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess be appropriate to my age. Like, I didn't like anything beyond. I liked growing up with the ALCS and the NLCS, and you got 4 teams, and you get down to, you know, you get down to the World Series. I mean, to me, when you have a regular season that long, that's why you do that, because you figure everything out with that. So I haven't liked any of the expansion with baseball. I understand it too, because it is absolutely a moneymaker to have more teams in the playoffs. But I like the old way on that.
When we come back, do we think the Titans will sign Jadeveon Clowney or Logan Ryan over the weekend before we come back on Monday? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, we've been talking a whole lot about the Titans, whether or not they should sign Jadeveon Clowney, how much of a priority is bringing back Logan Ryan and putting him into the fold. Do we believe that either Jadeveon Clowney or Logan Ryan will be signed before we come back on the air on Monday? Joe, I'll start with you.
Gosh, that's a great question. It's gone really strangely quiet on Clowney.
Yes.
Like with Logan Ryan, I think I would say it's kind of obvious by now that the market probably isn't what he was hoping it would be. And it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. And I understand why he did things the way he did. He wanted a shorter deal. He wanted another run at things. But you're still, when you get to that, and he played well with the Titans. I mean, I would think he would be an attractive player to a lot of teams. I know that there's been a lot of talk about the Lions. Of course, Matt Patricia, there's a link there. But $10 million a year, if that's the expectation, I don't blame teams for balking either. So it feels like with both of them, it's like waiting things out and hoping the price drops. But the Clowney watch, I mean, Logan Ryan is, you know, he's the next tier of players, and there's a lot of guys like that that are still kind of out there waiting to see what happens. Clowney is a premier guy out there on the market, and it's just been dead quiet for a few days. So I don't have a great feel for that. I would have expected something to happen with him by now. I thought for sure this week, I thought early this week, we'd have something established with Clowney, and it's not there. So if I'm having to guess on that, I'll say no.
I'm going to say no too. Like, but you would have to think at this point, like Clowney's number that he's asking for, it has to be coming down, right? Like you would think so, because you know, I hear reports last week about, you know, asking for $20 million, maybe in excess of $20 million per season, and there was a report out there that the Seahawks offered him 18.5, and I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, like, why in the world, if you're Jadeveon Clowney, would you not take that? Like, I can't envision the Titans really even going to that number, much less a number higher than that.
No, I can't either. I think, I think 15 is a pretty hefty price.
Yeah.
And I think if you could get there, if you're the Titans and you look at your situation, you know, I mean, I think you'd have to really consider something like that around that range, especially, you know, if you love him as a player, you feel really good about his prior relationship with Mike Vrabel and how Vrabel will use him and all that stuff. But man, I'm 18.5. I think that's a big, big number. And again, we've talked about the whole sack thing. It's not just about the sacks. You know, he does a lot for a team, but usually guys who get that kind of money are, you know, dominant players and also players who are healthy. And there are questions about Clowney's health. He's had several issues there.
But you know, from like a reading the tea leaves standpoint, you look at the moves the Titans have made. Casey gone. They lost Austin Johnson. It just seems like Clowney is the play. And I think a lot of Titans fans have connected the dots there. But then you see what looks to be what the need is for the Titans there, and then you hear some of the numbers that have been tossed out there, and the two just don't really match up to me, because I just can't see John Robinson being willing to go anywhere near $20 million, even though every sign of what the Titans have done so far in this free agency period kind of points to going after a guy like Clowney. You add those two elements together, and they don't really add up to me.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, it has felt that way. And right now, at this very moment, and this happens a lot in free agency, there's always a time when a particular team has lost some guys and hasn't had the corresponding moves, and you're like, whoa, look at – all the guys this team has lost. What's going on right now? I mean, there's still a long way to go, and there's a draft to go. NFL.com's Michael Silver was on Seattle Radio yesterday and kind of talked about the idea that, you know, really Clowney's hopes for the payday don't look good. And so maybe he would do a one-year deal for this year and just try to go out and have a monster dominant year, hit the market again, and try to get into that $20 million range next year. So the question would be, where would the Titans be? You know, would the Titans be up for that? Come for a year, and let's see how it goes. And maybe if things go well, they can, you know, they can keep him. But of course, there's no question. You're talking about a guy looking for a big payday. If he plays the way that you'd need to play to have that payday, you'd feel good about that. But I mean, $20 million, man, that's a lot. And again, a core injury, it's an easy way to kind of explain how he faded late last year, but it's also something that has to concern you.
Joe, what are you getting into this weekend? We've got a nice weekend full of nice weather in front of us. What's on the docket for Joe Rexroad and company for the weekend?
Well, I am doing some work, so, you know, boring, but I will be, you know, doing some work. I mean, that's a weird thing. You know, this job, you're used to working on the weekends because usually you're covering stuff.
Right.
So you don't look at it. I probably should try to work it around and you know, be off while there's nothing to cover. But as it is, I got some work to do. But I think, you know, might take the middle child to the school basketball court, maybe do a little full court one-on-one, you know, to stay in shape. I got to work with my daughter on some volleyball. And of course, her volleyball season's been zapped, just like everybody's every season has been zapped. And I'm sure there's going to be some more. You know, Ozark's third season, I think, came out today. So for anybody who watches that show, that's exciting news. There's going to be some binging on that, too.
It's a great show. I've got Smash Brothers tonight from 6 to 7, myself and Adam Vingan, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Also, we'll be doing a Twitter takeover of the 102.5 The Game Twitter account tonight from 7 to 8, answering your questions. So that's my Friday night plans.
Ooh.
At some point this weekend, I'm going to light a fire in my front yard, in my fire pit, just for the sake of doing it. I mean, I've been kind of collecting wood, and it's all been wet lately because of the rain we've had. It's dried out now, so I think I can do it. Also, Joe, I live on top of a hill, and there's like woods around me, so I may just start firing golf balls off into the woods. I mean, to be outside, get my body moving a little bit. My golf game absolutely sucks to begin with, but maybe I can work on it this weekend from the top of the hill in my front yard.
Self-improvement. I like it. Good luck with that. And I might I got to remember to troll you guys on the Twitter takeover tonight. So hopefully you'll see me on there.
I hope I provide you with a great deal of entertainment from my living room tonight. It'll be nice.
I look forward to it.
Well, Joe, regardless of what happens this weekend, I'm glad that we could be outside. We can, even while we're social distancing, can be around the good weather, because that's made it very difficult the last few weeks. Social distancing and rain. It's not a good combo.
It is not. And PSA, you know, if you're looking for something to eat, a lot of restaurants around here have added delivery, are doing curbside takeout. We did Black Rabbit last night in downtown on 3rd Street. There's so many places. Check it out. There's lists out there. If you can, support your local businesses.
Joe, that's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. Good show today. Thanks for joining us this week. We appreciate it.
All right, bud. Have a good show tonight with Adam, and have a good weekend.
Absolutely. We'll be back on Monday to talk about everything that happened over the weekend in the world of sports. This is Morning Drive. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. Hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.